Moss. It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future.
Good morning and welcome to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning. Last Sunday, we started talking about the fall, and I'm loving cooler weather here on a Sunday morning. What's the headline of the week? I think that it's got to go to gold bars at Costco. Might be my favorite article of the week. It was trending as number one on CNBC this week. Can you believe this? Costco is selling gold bars at... Now, when I first read this, I thought, oh, they're at the store. They're actually not at the store. They're only online. You have to be a member to get these, but they get sold out really, really quickly. So every time I would go on there, you could interestingly quickly get a glimpse of what it cost the last time they sold it, and then it goes away, and then it says we're all out for now. But this is the Pamp Suisse, and Pamp, I looked this up. They're supposedly the largest precious metal company on the planet, but it's the Pamp Suisse Lady Fortuna gold bar. And I'm able to see these in comparison to an iPhone. So the size of a 1 ounce gold bar, it's more like a gold piece of candy. It looks like an Andes candies, or remember it's the chocolate candy with the green mint middle. It's about that size, maybe a little bit bigger than that. But Lady Fortuna is the Roman goddess of fortune and the personification of luck, chance, and fate. So she's a pretty good representation on this 1 ounce gold bar. What is interesting, though, is what it's selling for. So if you look at what gold spot was at the end of this week, gold spot price, that moves every minute of the day, just like a stock would. So now it doesn't usually move all that dramatically, but gold spot price was around $1,875 for an ounce of gold. But when I clicked on the Costco link to be able to buy one of these ounces, the Lady Fortunas gold bars, about $1,979. So it was a little more than $100 more expensive for an ounce of gold. Now, I suspect what you're paying for here is not just the gold, but you're paying for the ounce stamp, and it is beautiful. It's a beautiful piece of artwork. Lady Fortuna, the goddess, the Roman goddess of fortune, luck, chance, and fate. She's the daughter of Jupiter, which the equivalent of, in the Greek world of Greek gods, the equivalent of Zeus. So it's selling for, you're paying for a little bit of artwork, but I also wanted to take a look at what it would be an easier way maybe just to buy gold if you really wanted to put some money into gold. You don't want to go and get a shopping cart of Andes candy size gold pieces. You could buy what's called GLD. GLD is just the gold ETF. Now, again, I'm not saying go out and buy gold, the gold ETF, but if you wanted access to gold, this is an ETF that in some ways is backed by the price of gold, and it tracks it really, really closely. If you go back, whether it's a year or two or 5 years, you can see that the spot price of gold tracks almost perfectly with GLD. So it's a really good representation. If you want access to that, I think that's an easier way to do it. Now, what about returns? We know that Warren Buffett doesn't love gold because it doesn't produce anything and you actually have to pay to store it. Yes, that's true. By the way, that ETF does cost money. It's about 0.4% per year. So it's cost almost 0.5% per year to own this as a financial instrument. But if you look back over the past 2 years, gold or GLD is up about 5% over the last 2 years. The Dow and S&P 500 are actually down a little bit, down about 3%. Over the past 3 years, though, the price of gold and or GLD down about 1% over the past 3 years. S&P 500 up 30%. Dow's up about 23%. So Warren Buffett, again, as he always does, wins that argument. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Your host, Wes Moss, here on a Sunday morning in studio. Producer Mallory joins us here Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. Listen, I just have to say, as if Costco didn't already have everything, I love that they're now getting into a little gold too.
It's 1,000% correct. I don't know what you can't buy.
It's true. Actually, Reeves just bought 3 pairs of pants last Sunday because, listen, they've got great clothing. They've got great food. There's really nothing you can't get now. Gold too.
You guys are on your way to being a Clark Howard influenced family. You're starting out right.
You know, there's worse things.
With that, we did get a lot of calls lately and or Facebook questions. So I want to just continue to do that. We did that last Sunday. I'd like to continue to answer some questions. I think maybe we start with a phone call. The money matters. Here's my phone number when it comes to asking questions. And I'm going to get to these on the air. You don't have to leave your name, but it'd be fine if you did. If you'd like a call back, sure. But we can just answer them right here on the air. So my number for that is 800-805-6301. Wait, say it again. 800-805-6301. The Money Matters question hotline. First one, Jim from Loganville.
I got a rental income property that is paid for, and I'm in the process of building another house. I heard you tell Jared Yamamoto that if he was to buy another house, he should always keep his condo in the perpetuity because it keeps up with inflation. But my question is, if I don't have a mortgage and interest rates are 7% right now, doesn't that mean that I'm saving 7% each year that I would have had a mortgage? I don't know, something to think about. Thanks, man, you're awesome.
Yeah, Jim makes, okay, I see what Jim is saying here. He's saying that, why wouldn't you sell your other property so you avoid having to pay a 7% mortgage, which makes total sense. It's when I was talking to Jared about this on the Von Hessler Doctrine, I don't know, a week or two ago, it's really hard to combat inflation. And we've had a lot of it in the last 3 years. We've had about 30% inflation in aggregate over the last decade or so. And most of it has come in just the last 3 years. So we've gotten our bell rung when it comes to inflation. It's a real thing. And then of course, interest rates are much higher because the Federal Reserve keeps raising rates to try to tamp down inflation. That's what's happening here. And Jim's totally right. If you don't have a mortgage, you're technically saving 7%. I did a calculation here on a $500,000 mortgage and just choosing a round number here at a 6.5% interest rate. If you look at your pay, which would be about $3,160 a month, because it's called $3,200 a month. And if you look at how much interest you're paying in that first year, most of what you're paying, particularly in the first several years, most of it is interest. So the interest here would be something like $32,000 in year one, and then it'd be just under $32,000 year two, et cetera. So you're paying mostly interest in the early years. And then as you get towards the tail end of that mortgage, the way the amortization works, you're paying more principal and less interest. But if you look at the whole schedule, 500 grand, and you just pay it off per schedule. And I went to I love bankrate.com's mortgage calculator. You end up paying about $1.137 million over the full life of the loan. And this is if you don't pay any extra principal down early. So think about that number. You started with 500, you borrowed 500, and over that whole period of time, you ended up paying almost 1.2 million. If you do the math on that, so that's $637,000 in interest, in addition to the $500,000 you paid back in principal. Now, if you were to look at that from, flip it around for a second, Mallory, as we were both talking this through, that's about 3% per year on the original amount that you put down. So if you take 500 that would grow to 1.137, it'd have to grow, and let's say if you put money in a mutual fund, it'd have to grow at 2.8% a year to get there. So as long as your asset has appreciated at 3% a year, then at least you've somewhat broken even and you've been able to spread out the payments. But yes, you've paid a ton in interest.
Yeah, that does sound painful, but it does seem like getting a return of 3% is not crazy for an ETF, right? That's true.
It depends on what we're looking at here. But of course, if you go back over the course of time and look at lots of different housing markets, particularly Georgia, Atlanta, I think is always a good example because it's not coastal. It's not geographically unbound, so it stayed slightly less, or it's not we're not on the coast, so we can keep building out and out and out. It's a really good representation. I think that if you look at the California coast, the prices are crazy. Anything waterfront is in the prices are completely insane. But Georgia is a pretty good representation. And housing prices here have gone up about the rate of inflation plus about 1%. And so the reason I told Jared, if you can, I'm not saying that you don't need the money from the prior property, and I'm not saying it's a bad idea to buy something and save your 6.5% or 7% mortgage, but it's so hard to fight inflation. One of the primary ways to do that is own assets that can inflate along with inflation over time. So yes, it's a good idea, always a great idea. And this is a great call from Jim, and thanks for listening, man. A really good idea to pay down the mortgage. We know that retirees who pay off the mortgage within 5 years are within 5 years of mortgage payoff are four times more likely to be a happy retiree. So it's great in a lot of different ways, financially and psychologically. Maybe a way to think about it just as a happy medium is just to do extra payments that are towards principal that can bring down the years of payment, hence bring down the amount of interest you pay. I'm going to take the same example. I'm putting this into Bankrate early mortgage payoff calculator. $500,000 loan, 6.5%. If I were to accelerate that by $570 a month, it's not nothing. It's a lot of money, but it takes your payment from roughly $3,160 to $3,730. So it's an extra $570 a month. That's a lot. But what's interesting is that it shaves exactly a decade off the mortgage. So you go from a 20 down, or you go from a 30, paying for 30 years, all the way down to paying for 20 years. And remember that $637,000 in interest that you would have paid per schedule, you save about $250,000 if you put down that $570 per month. You save $243,000 in interest, you shorten the mortgage by exactly 10 years in this example. So maybe that's a happy medium. Jim from Loganville, love the call. Again, your calls here, my phone number for that, 800-805-6301. We're going to run to weather, traffic, the More Money Matters, straight ahead. Morning and welcome back to Money Matters here at Sunday morning. Mallory, I want to get to a question from Facebook, but I'm sitting here doing the math on this is an article from CNBC about longevity and looking at the number of centenarians in the United States. There's about 89,000 centenarians in the United States out of our population, 336 million, which comes out to, so just for some context, 1% would be 3.3 million folks. So it's way less than 1%. So it's 0.25, it's 0.25%. It's pretty small chance to be able to live to 0.25.7%. So it's a low probability, but it's interesting, but people do it. There's almost 90,000 centenarians in the United States, and we're always looking at longevity, happy retirement. How does all of this, what are the ingredients? But interesting, social scientists break down personality traits into five different things. It's the five-factor model: openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism. Which one do you think links to the most longevity?
I can tell you right now, I don't think it's neuroticism.
Right. That's a great answer. That's how I would have, what I was going to say. It's definitely not neuroticism. It is, I could see agreeableness. I could see it's conscientiousness. Conscientiousness is the answer. Huh. And I guess that makes sense too. You make conscientious lifestyle choices. You're eating well. You're remembering to exercise. You're not smoking. That's conscientious.
So you're saying it's not an accident if you end up at 100 years old.
I don't think it's an accident.
Yeah.
I don't think it's an accident once in a while. Let's go to a quick Facebook question.
So a quick reminder for our listeners, we have a wonderful Facebook group just called Retire Sooner. If you type it into Facebook, you should see the group pop up. You just have to request access, but it's a wonderful community of people. And in there, we had Annie ask us, Wes, how do you know someone is truly a fiduciary? Is there any way to confirm?
Mm. Oh, by the way, I wanted to ask you, I forgot to mention this. Guess the longest, the most centenarians per state.
Oh, the most?
And the least.
Okay, hang on. There's 90,000, so there's a fair number. So I'm going to guess there's something like some
it's
state
the
has.
Rate. The rate. The percentage, the highest percentage.
Oh, the highest percentage. I'm going to 2%.
No, well, it is 4 per 10,000.
Oh.
And it's the state of Hawaii.
Oh.
And the least is Alaska. Something, come on, something about the sun, of course. Yeah, more sun, better. Oh, we've got to run. I promise. Let's get back to that Facebook question. How do you know someone is a fiduciary from Connie? And it's a really good question. We're going to answer that when we get back. We've got to do a quick news weather traffic. The More Money Matters right here, 95.5 WSB. Is your cash working for you? For years, banks have gotten away with paying next to nothing for the privilege of holding your money. Today, investors have more options as the Federal Reserve has raised and raised and raised interest rates dramatically. Why not take advantage of it? If you're interested in finding a higher yielding solution for the safety allocation of your investment portfolio, reach out to my team at yourwealth.com. It's Y-O-U-R wealth.com.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future.
Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters here Sunday morning. Wes Moss, your host. And we've been answering listener caller questions and go to the Facebook page. Again, my hotline for questions, it comes straight to me. And our team is 800-805-6301. That's 800-805-6301. We've got one of those coming up. And then Mallory, right before the break, we were talking about centenarians. Highest percentage of them in the United States, Hawaii, lowest in Alaska. If we're listening to Dan Buettner, it's pretty much pretty simple. It's sun being outside. It's kind of a no-brainer. However, Connecticut is number two, so maybe that doesn't necessarily work. Either way, where are we headed with it? I said Connie. It was actually Anne, I believe.
Annie, yes. Annie on our Facebook group.
What is Annie asking?
Annie is asking, she says, Wes, how do you know someone is truly a fiduciary? Is there a way to confirm?
Is there a way to confirm a couple of things here? How do you confirm? Well, one, you just ask, right? Just directly. And the fiduciary, as far as I know, is legally obligated or maybe just morally obligated to answer your question, and maybe not legally obligated, but to answer your question, because a fiduciary, the way that is set up is that they are there to act in your best financial interest. And if you get a clear yes, then they're probably a fiduciary. If you get something that's vague or wavering, yes and no and something, then you're probably not talking to a fiduciary. I think that's number one. Two, if you look at the credentials, so you've got the CFA, the Chartered Financial Analyst, they're bound by a code of ethics that requires putting client interest first. A certified financial planner or CFP, again, same thing. They must adhere to a really strict code of ethics, which includes acting in the client's best interest. And then an RIA, another acronym here, a registered investment advisor or advisory firm required to act as fiduciaries. So now there are also some hybrid models where they have separate business units that can take commissions. So investigate the compensation model. If it is a percentage fee and that is it, there it's probably a fiduciary, and that's the fee only model. And this is what's a little confusing in the industry. A fee based model is based on a fee, but there could also be other ways that they're getting paid, and that's not necessarily a terrible thing. If you think about annuities, which again I'm not a huge fan of annuity because interest rates are higher. Annuity rates are relatively decent today. So they're not necessarily terrible for everyone. There's some instances where I think they could make some sense. But if you think about it, if you're a financial person and you're advising somebody to buy an annuity, the annuity is kind of a one and done. You put your money in it, let's say, and it sits, particularly if you're buying an immediate annuity. So there has to be some compensation model. And that, I think, so in some cases, compensation or through commission, it's not necessarily the worst thing in the world. But if you're really looking for somebody who is looking out for your financial best interest, then the fiduciary model and the fee-only model, I think, certainly works, in my opinion, very, very well for that. You can go to BrokerCheck at FINRA to check that. You can look at SEC, state registrar. So there's a lot of different ways to check on it as well. But if you're talking to a financial person, you should be able to get a straight answer and pretty quickly find out if they are or they are not. All right. Next thing we're going to do, and thank you, Annie, for that question. Facebook page again, Mallory, is?
It's Retire Sooner. So definitely check that out. Join. We try to keep it private, so it's a little bit more controlled. We don't want, you know, just anybody in there since people are typically asking financial questions. But join and you know, send us your questions. Let us know your happy retiree stories. We love it. It's a great group of people in there.
Okay, we have a call. This call is from Steve in Carrollton.
Hey, Wes, as a longtime listener who's applied your principles and thoughts and have now been successfully retired for a couple of years, it dawned on me that perhaps occasionally you could aim your shows at that audience, because the people that have been with you a while have already gone across one line, and now we're working towards the next line in our life. And any advice you could give how to successfully handle your funding and that kind in that stage of life, that kind of thing, I think would be really helpful. So thanks a lot, man.
Cool. Steve, thank you for the call. Again, call line 800-805-6301. What Steve is asking here, maybe he's thinking that, Wes, you're always talking about getting to retirement. You're talking about early retirement on your podcast and on Money Matters. You're talking about getting to retirement. I think we do talk about when you're already in retirement, but I think he makes a great point. So we'll cover it here. It's cool that he's successfully retired. Sounds like he's been in retirement a couple of years and he has crossed that line. And I think the first mindset shift is going from accumulation to distribution. Accumulation is arguably an easier phase to be in because you're socking money away. It's a marathon. You're just going, and you're less concerned about the market's ups and downs because you have a long way to go before you ever need to use the money. So I think it's easier. The accumulation stage is easier. When you, as Steve said here, cross that line, now you got to start pulling the money out, and you're utilizing the money that you have accumulated. And it's just a little, it's scarier. There's a little less room for error, maybe a lot less room for error. You still need to be patient. We still ought to have to understand that markets fluctuate and go up and down. So we can't be scared away from investing in assets that inflate, because we are trying to what? Number one, we protect our purchasing power. We have to be able to do that and keep up with the cost of inflation and maintain our living standard. There's a couple of things. One, I think of multiple streams of income. I think of income investing, and I think of the 4% rule. That's what I think about when I think distribution. How do I best use the money I've already saved and have the lowest level of worry and fear that it's going to ever run out? So one, having multiple streams of income automatically helps with that. Pensions, Social Security, if you don't have a pension, that most people don't have pensions. And then you utilize your retirement accounts, your liquid retirement accounts, to then generate another form of income. As we know, as we study retirees, the happy group averages about three of these, then plus a income stream that comes from retirement savings. Unhappy retirees have two or less. So there is some real thought around the diversification of income, multiple streams of income. Secondly, I would say that income investing itself is a way to at least enter in more predictability around how your assets are doing. So the age-old formula that we're all essentially following when it comes to investing our money is TR equals G plus I, total return equals growth plus income. We're very, very difficult, and it's impossible to control what markets are doing. Their markets will behave as they do, but over time grow along with aggregate earnings. But it can be very fits and starts, and we get through bear markets down 20%, down 30%, then we recover. It's erratic. If you look at the averages over time, it's not so erratic. But what isn't is the I, or income. And if you're looking at, let's say, if you're trying to isolate your retirement assets and thinking distribution, there is a real steadiness to dividends. They come every quarter. And companies, once they start paying one, they're really trying not to ever reduce it. Sometimes it happens, but in large part, they stay and they increase. In fact, dividends over the course of economic history or market history have actually grown at double the rate. That's cash flow, double the rate of inflation in almost any time period you look at. So that is really important as well, is to say I've got dividends from stocks and I have bond interest and now CD interest, because CDs are paying a lot now because the Federal Reserve has raised rates. And now CDs are paying 4% and 5%, depending on how much money you're willing to commit. And then thirdly, for Steve, I would say that as long as you are following, again, we're in distribution now, we're not accumulating. As long as we're following the 4% plus rule, we have a really good idea and a high probability, and there's no 100% probability in any sort of planning, is that, but we can get to 90, 95% confidence, at least looking at history, that if we use the 4% plus rule, we're able to max out what we're pulling out from our assets without, Mallory, do you know the?
Without running out. This is one of my favorites.
Yeah. You max it, you want to be able to max out what you pull out without running out. And that's what the 4% plus rule does. There we talked about it here on the show, I think a month ago, this past summer, Susie Orman had come out and said, yeah, you can't use the 4% rule. It's dangerous. You can only use 3% of your assets. I just don't think that's the case. I think that.
I mean, I don't think anybody really wants to work forever just for funsies.
No. And what we also need to understand is that if we start telling people that you can only use 3 or 2 or 1% of their savings, then people aren't going to save anyway, because what's the point? And that's why Bengen's work, aerospace engineer and financial advisor, kind of the godfather of the math behind markets and portfolio withdrawals, put it all together and around 4, and he came out last or 2 years ago and said he thinks you could push it to 4.5%. That's why we call it the 4% plus rule. Put those three things together we talked about, thinking about steady income, multiple streams of income, and the steadiness of the cash flow and the 4% rule. And I think that it gets you a lot of the way to being able to conquer, tackle, master that next phase when you're living on the assets that you have saved, one, and two, trying to be able to keep up inflation, outpace inflation. We've got to combat inflation. If the last couple of years hasn't reminded us of that, it's rung our bell. I think that analogy is floating around in my head because we are in football season. And I was just at an NYO football game this week, and there was some, I just so conflicted as a parent. I want my kids to play football, and they love football, and two of them are playing, three are playing, two are tackle, one's flag. And, you know, every time your kid gets hit or tackled, you'd say that, maybe that's why I'm using the bell ring as my example around the wake up call around inflation. We've got to position ourselves long term to be able to combat it and fight it. With that, we're going to run to traffic and weather and then more Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning, and I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning. Today, 9 to 10, because of Bulldog Brunch coming up. Producer Mallory in studio. Thank you, of course, always for being here.
Thanks for having me.
When you are here, when you do decide to show up.
You know, sometimes.
This is a email that I got, and kind of, I read it a couple times, and I want to bring it up here on the show. So, Ralph, if you're listening, and we'll give last names here, but it basically, Ralph's been listening a long time. I'll skip that part. And he said, look, I've got many attributes you recommend for happy retirees, mortgage-free, multiple sources of income, and several what you call core pursuits. Here's where it gets interesting. He said, I think the term core pursuit, and the fact that you define it as something for which you have passion can be off-putting. This is supposed to be fun, Ralph. Passion for me means something that is all-encompassing. In that sense, I don't have passion for anything except my wife. I play golf twice a week when I can. I play my guitars almost every day. I love to travel, take multiple trips, big and small each year. Landscape design. I love watching college football. Ralph sounds a lot like me. Like, I'm literally every single thing here. I do the same stuff that Ralph does, except I don't really play guitar all that much. I play piano a lot, but I've learned to play guitar, but I'm just not that good at it. He's saying, I just think the term core pursuit and passion are pressure packed. It's like, geez, I guess I need to find core pursuits like the people you interview on your podcasts. People have written books, created their own podcasts, formed nonprofits. It makes it seem like retirement's a competitive sport. I'm not a successful retiree because I haven't done those things. Even though we're a competitive culture, retirement need not be measured by those terms. All right. So if I've ever given off the inclination that this is like some big competition, then maybe that's on me, because it's so not. And I think Ralph is so in the HROV sweet spot. To me, those are all core pursuits to me. And when I define core pursuits, I say hobbies on steroids. I don't know how I guess I've maybe said the word passion. I don't know if passion's the right word. I agree with Ralph. These are just things that take up your mind share. You're thinking about them. Like, look, if you're playing golf twice a week, that's a core pursuit. You play guitar every day. You're kind of always thinking about, hey, when am I going to play golf? It'd be fun to go on a golf trip. Maybe I need some new golf clubs. That to me is a core pursuit because it's like, it's a big part of your life and identity and structure during the day. So I think that that's a nice wake-up call for me, for Ralph, that look, this is not a competition. And on the Retire Sooner podcast, these people are authors and they've done podcasts, but a lot of those people are still working. Like, that's their job. I think the way Ralph has got this thing drawn up and college football, like this, I'd be like buddies with Ralph. This is like perfect to me. Anyway. So thank you for that email. Your core pursuits are just hobbies on steroids. There's zero pressure. Like Mallory, she has a new hobby. She loves it today, leaves it tomorrow. Love it or leave it.
It's true.
I'd say you're planting seeds for future core pursuits.
See, that sounds so much nicer.
Call them up to the majors. This is Money Matters. You can leave a question throughout the week at 800-805-6301. Or you can find us, of course, at yourwealth.com. That's YOUR, yourwealth.com. Have a wonderful rest of your Sunday.